Hey guys, this is Coach Keita Bussey with 180 Firearms Training, Mike Seifert, and today we are joined by Manny Bragg. Welcome to the 180 Firearms Training Podcast. So Manny, why don't you go ahead and give us a general introduction about yourself?
Oh, that would take the whole show. So I'll give you the 2-minute version, right? So goes way back. I didn't start shooting until I was 30. A buddy of mine takes me out back. And it's like, hey, shoot those pieces of steel on the plate rack. So I did, got hooked, shot my, didn't even practice. Just went to a competition, went to the Area 3 Championship back in 1996. I was third from last. The only two people I beat DQ'd. So it was, it was back in the day, but, anyway, decided that I loved it. Got serious about it a couple years after that. And then the USPSA changed how you could qualify for the World Shoot Team back in, 2002. And they, instead of appointing, they made it where you had to qualify. And I'm like, you know, that's something I want to do. And so, that's when the practice and the nightmares began. And, you know, I got lucky and hit the fourth spot for the world shoot in 2005 when it was in Ecuador. And I got lucky, you know, the next 5 world shoots to be on the team again. So that was the dream, you know. And that was always one of my taglines is set your goals to accomplish your dreams. And many, many goals throughout the years to accomplish that. But I was successful in doing it. So, and then, you know, I was partners in a office machine company up in Missouri for years and didn't know how good I had it. I didn't have to work and made good money. So, but I wanted to live on the range. That's what everybody wants to do, right? So I up and sold everything and moved to Florida, lived on the range. And like, wow, now I work twice as hard, make half as much, but I'm living the dream. So I moved around a little bit, started off down in Central Florida, down at Universal Shooting Academy with Shannon and Frank, and then I was there for about 5 years, and then moved up north to New Smyrna Beach, the Volusia County Gun Club, brought Gorka Ibanez on board. He was this young kid that I was like, I need a strong back. I don't care about the mind at this point. I just need a strong back to help me set up matches.
And he works hard.
Yes. So Gorka come on board, and he's a good worker, and he ended up buying the and so he's got it going for him. And so we run Extreme GM. We run both the range altogether. I try to figure out, I don't even know. We run like 27, 28 matches a month of varying types of USPSA, IDPA, Steel Challenge, 2-gun, long range, 22, precision. There's just a bunch of different matches that's there. So they were boarded in Florida. There's no excuse for not being able to. So. Well, obviously, I've put on thousands of matches, and throughout the years, it's like anybody that's on the squad, what's the last thing you want to do is go over there and reset, stuff. Right? So, there has to be a way to have something, and so I put my mind together, come up with a prototype. The first prototype and the one that I have now is a little bit, but it worked. And so I made it to where next thing was is make it to where it's manageable to ship. The first one I shipped, it was like $70 and I charged $20 for ship. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that's not how you make money. So we redesigned it with a buddy of mine and made it to where it fits in a Priority Mail box. You know, it ships for $23, $24. And I mean, it's, you know, we have it on different matches throughout the last several years. I mean, they work flawless. As long as everything, the cables are taut, it's flawless. And you don't have to bend over. And that's one thing I don't ever want to do again. Every time I go to a match now and I see one, I'm like, oh, I just want them to have the stomp pad.
Yeah, so for those of you who aren't familiar with the traditional stomp pad, you have to get down on your knees, pull these metal bars that are spring loaded, one on each side, and rotate them to set this, and then fold the top back down so it's kind of at a peak. Then when you step on that, that activates a moving target. So what is the mechanism you do? You said you don't have to get down on the ground at all. You can do it standing up.
No, you don't have to do anything. So it resets itself. It's made out of AR-500, so it's literally indestructible. Everything's AR-500, except for the cable itself. But basically, it has a bungee on the foot pad, and when you stomp down on it, it automatically just pulls it back up.
Oh, wow. Okay, so nice. I've heard stories of this. I haven't actually seen it yet.
Yeah, I shot with those in Virginia State last year. They were very nice. You know, I mean, it gets all the, you know, what a stomp pad is supposed to do. But like you said, there's no resetting. So, I mean, it's literally just, it's kind of like an angled piece of steel that you push down and then it comes back up and works perfectly every time.
Yeah, I'm assuming
I'm assuming the consistency on that is a little bit more because like the resetting one, you could always reset it just a little bit differently.
Well, the problem really when you reset those things, if they're not staked down, you know, when you reset it, you can shift the square. So if they're not staked down perfectly, it's not going to technically be the same for everybody else. And that's when you start to get problems. So the fact that you have this little box that, or this little pad that you don't even have to really do anything, you just put your foot on it and it comes right back up. It takes all that out of it. So I think it's a big improvement. I enjoyed shooting on it. And every one that I stomped on worked perfectly. So I had no complaints.
I got tired of reshoots because somebody didn't set it. You know, that's the biggest thing.
Someone set it properly.
Somebody shoots a stage, they get down to the end and it's not set. And it's like, man, that was either a great run or it's a blessing that you get to reshoot, you know? And I'm like, you know, you get one chance, it should count. And so that was one of the other things as well. And I've come up with I've got a prototype now of the same thing with an add-on device that makes it a hand where you push it down. Hand lever. So that's coming sometime in the next few months.
So where can our listeners go if they want to buy one of your stomp pads?
Right now, the only place you can get it's on my website, mannybragg.com. The other thing I come up with was to go with that is the other thing that's a nightmare is whenever they go to set swingers, a lot of times we used to use the two boards with the hinge in the middle. So, you know, you pull the string and it spins, and I can't tell you how many times I've about lost an eye, you know, because it's like you get it almost set and then it comes loose. So I also came up with an AR-500 activator stick. So the two combinations together, you can't set it wrong. It's only one way it can set.
Yeah.
I can't set it backwards. I mean, it's so simple. And
sticks, you have to have the hinge on the correct side or it won't go, and then you get a reshoot.
Right. Yeah. And then God forbid they painted it the wrong way or you thought that it was the red was on the bottom, but now it was on the top. You know, it's like, that's why I usually
it's all covered in mud and you can't see anything anyway.
Right. Like I don't want to be the guy that set that and then it didn't work for the next shooter, you know. So I usually just avoid at all costs.
So Manny, Grant has joined us now. This is Grant Chancellor Madison from South Africa.
Hello.
Did you do the world shoot that was held in South Africa?
No, that's the year I began. That was 1996.
Okay, you missed that one.
In 2004, didn't we? 2003, 2004?
I thought it was, I could be mistaken, but I thought it was 96.
I think it was two.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't qualify to go if it was before 05. So.
Okay, gotcha.
Oh, dang it.
So,
are you ready? Stand by.
So, what are you doing now in Florida? What kind of events are you putting on? What do you offer?
Well, I come up with nobody likes pacing targets. I mean, we all love USPSA and all the other sports, but I come up with my own version of an action steel match. And so we run that every Wednesday and the first Sunday of the month, which is just static steel. So all you have to do is put a mark on it and it counts. We do that. And then we run 8 USPSA matches. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4. I take that back. We run 4 USPSA matches. We run 8 before COVID hit, and now we're back down to 4. So it keeps us pretty busy on the weekends.
And I've been to that range. I put on a class there. That's a really great range.
Yes, we've added on quite a bit. I mean, which I say we, Gork has added on quite a bit.
Yeah.
I think 35 bays now. So, and then we got a 900-yard rifle as well. So,
yeah, he was running around like a madman when I was there working his butt off.
Yes.
Do you find new shooters are more likely to do your easy steel almost challenge match, or do they come into the USPSA stuff because it looks cool?
Well, usually what we do is, I mean, every time we get a group in, if I ever do a concealed class, the first thing I do after I give them the concealed class, I take them over and I let them shoot some steel challenge. And I tell them, you know, this is the best way to keep your skills honed. And then once they get where they're safe with steel challenge, okay, you want to do a little modification to it, we'll take them over, we'll introduce them to action steel. So it's still steel, but now it's moving around. And then from there, you know, we get them into USPSA, and you know, then the rest is history. You know, they're sucked in for life. Their wallets will be.
So. Right.
That's how now you offer different types of on-site instruction and courses. What do you offer as far as that?
Yeah, I mean, I do a lot. These days I do a lot. I used to travel around, do a lot of group classes, but I'm getting old, so I don't like to leave home as like I used to travel and everything. But typically we'll do, especially when it's summer here, you know, it's miserable. So I'll do anything from 2 to 4 hour classes for anything from the beginner to somebody that's accomplished that wants to, you know, go to that next level.
Awesome. I got a question. So you've been in the game for a long time. Like, what is your opinion on the progression of the sport and where it's going? And like, it seems to be leaning more towards high cap guns when, you know, originally it started with single stack. But like, what's your feeling on it? Do you like the direction that it's going? I mean, would you just like seeing more people in the game, or like, how does it, you know?
Yeah, you know, we had record numbers, you know, prior to 2 years ago. You know, 2 years ago set everything across the country into a spin, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, for the first time since all that started, 2 weeks ago, we had our first sold-out match again.
Nice.
So, weekend, you know, we went from, you know, there for a while, it was going to be which club's going to hit 100 people first, you know. And we hit in the 90s at our local on a Saturday. But then it dropped down to, you know, as low as 15, you know. It's like, why do you guys do this? It's because we love the sport. You know, you take even for those 15 away, then, you know, you're never going to get anybody new. So we did it regardless if we made money or lost money. It's like we never cancel matches. And, you know, the progression, I mean, USPSA has grown, you know, significantly over the last several years. I wish it was still even more, but you know, people come into it. Some people come into it, they accomplish what they want, and then they get out. I mean, I've got several people that went into racing from USPSA, you know.
Yeah.
Little did they know it was going to cost them 10 times more than what a gun would cost. But,
right. Right. Well, what's your take on, like, all these new divisions that have come over the years, and, you know, like, how do you think that that's affected the sport? Do you like, you know, does, like, I wasn't around back in 95 and 2000 when you were shooting. So like, what was it like then compared to what it is now? Because to me, like, when I watch a YouTube video of like, you know, the national championships in 85 and 90, you know, you watch and it seems like a much different game nowadays. It's much faster, you know, and
more athletic.
There's much more division, or, you know, many more divisions. So like to me, you know, are you, you know, since you're an OG kind of guy, you know, you've been around for a while, are you like, do you not like all these new divisions? Does it not play to the sport that you originally came into back in the day? Or is it everything that the sport was about originally?
I mean, back in the day, wasn't it just open and standard as divisions?
Open and, open limited, right? That was
a little before my time. When I got into it, it was 96, and we had, at the time, we had open, limited. What was the other ones?
Was it modified?
Single stack. Open, limited, brawl, or single stack. When I was on the USPSA board for, I think, 6 years, and I was on the board when we brought in production. And, you know, originally it was just going to be, it has to be in a box, and you have to take it out of the box to shoot the match. And then, you know, we've modified that considerably since then. But I think, you know, Carry Optics, I think that was a great move. I think all the divisions are good. I mean, there's only, you know, there's only one or two that there's not much attendance in that, mm-hmm. you know, hurting anybody for them to be there. So, okay, fine. Right. Bring somebody in, fine. I don't care. You know, the only thing that we don't have that I would love to see, but I always got shot down, and everybody that I talked to anyway, was like a 22, you know, similar to like Steel Challenge. I mean, 20, 22 is so much more reasonable, and for young kids,
you know,
easy way to bring him in. But I mean, we got I don't know how old he is. He's, I think he's 9 now at the range. And I mean, he's, you know, he shoots as good as, he's never last. He's, you know, he's working his way up, and, but he's shooting Carry Optics. So with a 9mm.
Well, we just had a 14-year-old girl win Carry Optics as the ladies production national champion.
I've seen
14.
That.
14.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Morgan was her name.
Yes, kids.
That's super exciting. That is quite a feat.
For sure.
My daughter is 14, so that really 14. Puts it in perspective for me. She's just like trying to pass math class, and this girl's a national champion.
Yeah, winning national championships at 14. I mean, we got a lot of years left, you know, that's nice.
Right.
So she's probably feeling pretty good about that one.
Awesome. Yeah.
So I was going to ask you the same question on the progression of the sport. What are the biggest changes that you've seen, and what do you think brought these changes about?
I mean, PCC obviously is the biggest change there. You know, I mean, what we see at our places, and it may be like this across the country, I don't know. I've not traveled around here, you know, recently, but a lot of the people that are more mature, that, you know, are competitive with a handgun, all of a sudden they can grab that rifle, and now all of a sudden they're more competitive. So that's fun to see. So I think we've actually retained some of the more mature people in the sport by having that.
Yeah, I think that's cool.
So do you think that PCC was a good do you think it's a good introduction, even though, you know, you always get the crap about shooting a rifle at a pistol match, and I always come back with it's a practical shooting match and my gun is much more practical than that open gun, so I feel
I have to say, you know, I've jumped on that bandwagon as well, you know, but it's, again, in the end, it's a matter of what brings people into the sport, and, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, any shooting is shooting, so obviously, some people think that, I mean, you know, it's a whole conversation in itself.
So,
well, I'm on the opinion that PCC kind of is still in its infancy. And obviously we have good rifle matches, we have good pistol matches. Now we kind of get into that point of having good PCC centric matches. But the problem with that is you have a PCC match, the handgun guys can join and they hate it because all the targets are far away and very small.
That's true.
So it's kind of like to mitigate your kind of expectations. If you're going to go to a PCC match, be prepared for a PCC challenge.
For sure. And at the same time, it takes a, you know, a good amount of skill to manipulate around the rifle to try to, you know, go in ports, out of ports.
Mm-hmm.
Then the match can't be about like how good are your manipulations around very tight corners, because that's also not fun.
Right.
It needs to be a balance. No, Mike, it's not fun. It's not like fun having to try and stuff the 16-inch carbine. You know, in little tiny ports.
Well, that's like, the art of it, right? That's what
one stage, one stage, one stage or two stages is fine, but like not the whole match. Don't think, okay, we're gonna make this hard, and we're gonna make tiny little ports, and we're gonna make
All I'm saying is,
I have created PCC perfection.
Time out. You can hate PCCs, right? But like, what is really the drag? I mean, we all sit there and watch revolvers shoot for 45 seconds on a 10-second stage. I mean, my gun is quiet, so it's not loud like an open gun, right? I don't really have to reload, so I'll be done very fast, and like I'll help paced after that. So I mean, I feel like people should like PCCs more than they do. But like going back to what you said, Manny, about like the divisions that are dying. I mean, what do you think that happens with those divisions? I mean, you leave them in, but like, you know, for a major match, you'll see people switch over just to that division so they can win a trophy. Do you think that they deserve to win a trophy if they're only like one of one in the category?
Well, the good thing is if it's a big match, USPSA has dictated where awards can be allocated. you know, has to have X amount of people. You have to beat somebody to win something.
Well, what I'm getting at is, do you agree with that? Or do you think that people should get a trophy if they're in the division, even if they're the only person? So you do not. Okay. All right.
What if they're in a division, they're the only person and they beat everyone else?
Well, they get overall.
Well, okay, so let's say not everyone else. Let's say they're shooting a revolver and they beat everyone in production, single stack, and open, and then get beat by a PCC guy, so they don't get the overall and they don't get anything else at all.
Well, they could actually shoot in production.
They could, yeah. Yeah, revolver is a weird choice, you know.
Yeah, I just wonder why people want to do that. You know, why would you want to keep yourself out there with a revolver? You got to do all them reloads.
Because you don't like stage plans. You shoot six rounds, standing like, reload, shoot six rounds.
Like you hate yourself. Like, why? You're supposed to go out and have fun. Why do you do this yourself? You know, it's like torture.
You can shoot revolver in production, but you could definitely shoot it in limited if you wanted to be like a nutcase. So,
yeah.
Well, yeah, you could shoot limited minor, but separate discussion.
Right.
So here's another question. How do you feel the sport has evolved as far as athleticism, how quickly people are shooting, moving, things like that? Do you think the skill pool has evolved?
Or is that the equipment? Is it the skills or the equipment?
No, it's definitely the skills. I mean, I look at some videos. I found some old VHS tapes a couple years ago, back whenever I used to take them to the range. And even, I mean, it's been 20 years. The first time I was second at the Nationals back in 2002, you look at that versus even now, even though I'm more mature, it's like the skill set is crazy different. And it's just constantly evolving. You know, Latham, we were talking one time and I said, you know, where do you think the sport's going? And he said, well, it's constantly going up, constantly going up. He says, you know, if I ever would have laid off a year, I would have never been able to come back and be where I'm at, just because of, you know, everything is being dissected down. I mean, we use a timer for everything, you know, whether it be movement, reloads, anything like that. We're trying to how to make it where it's just a little bit quicker. And, you know, those tenths and hundreds, I call them nickels and dimes. Fives and the 0.10s add up over, you know, a 32-round course of fire. So,
I think Rob changed the sport a little bit, even back in the day when he proved that shooting alphas would get you a better score than going faster. I think he was one of the first guys to really do that.
That is so situational to say that. That is so situational to say that. I'm sorry. But like, I came from a match today and like, I had two alpha and six Charlie and I did it. It was a 3.5 second stage that I did in 2.4 and I win. So like,
well, keep in mind, PCC was a thing.
Yeah, you always
won. How many mics
alphas,
did you get?
But like, well, none on that stage. But what I'm saying is like always want alphas. But like if your alphas are going to take you a minute to shoot, you know, like then you don't want them, you know, like I don't like there's a balance there of like you gotta have like a clock going in your head where you're like, this is taking way too long and just go to your next target. Cause at some point you're hurting your score. You're not helping it by sitting there for an extra 10 seconds trying to get the alpha.
It just doesn't make sense to me. I remember shooting a stage back years ago at Area 8. I figured up and it was actually like a 2.5 hit factor stage. So therefore you should shoot just a little slower. Or if you get a Charlie, you got to pick it up.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's very situational, right? So like on a big course of fire where everybody's average time is from 22 to 27, you know, you're not saving anything by doing it in 20. But like, you know, on a 10-second course of fire, and if I do it in 7, that's 30% right there. So that's why I pick and choose throughout the day. You know, usually the bigger ones, you want the points. But if you see, you know, and that's, again, like, if you're watching scores and you see an opportunity on one of the bigger stages where – like everybody's doing it this way, but I think I'm going to save 5 seconds, you know, then I might back off and say that I'm just going to see if I can do it faster because I think that time is going to help. But that's where I'm always doing the math problem. You know, I'm always doing it in my head. Like, well, how many Charlies do I think I'm going to shoot and how fast do I think I can do it? And is it worth it? And that's what I always ask myself.
I'll never forget a few years ago, Rocky Mountain 300, they were all 60 round stages, right? So it was funny to watch the revolver guys. They get to the end and they couldn't even pull the trigger because it's 60 rounds. Shoot, you know, but I remember it being over an 18 hit factor stage, which is like unheard of, right? So at 18 points per second, you just want them on paper.
Right. And that's why I think that everybody gets locked into one way. And I think that it depends on what stage you're shooting is what you got to your game plan, right? Am I going to be more conservative here and go for my points, which is potentially going to slow me down 2 seconds, or am I going to kind of go balls to the wall because I think I'm going to make up a lot of time here, which, you know, even 2 seconds on a small enough stage is a lot of time. So I don't know.
Well, I mean, I want to shoot 90 to 95% of the points regardless.
Yeah, but if you do it in 2 minutes and I can do 80% of the points in 30 seconds, I'm going to crush you every time. And that doesn't matter. I don't care how you get there. I don't care if the percentage next to your name looks great with 95% of the points. All I care is that my name is above your name at the end of the day. So if it takes me to an 85, 40 seconds faster, so be it. I don't care what you think about my 85%. I'm just going to crush you. So that's the way I'm looking at it.
You know, some of the classes, you know, say A, B class, you could do that. When you get to the top, though,
Jorge, I mean, he got one mic in the entire world shoot, the entire 2017 world shoot, one mic. Like, that is impressive shooting. So they do stack up quite a lot, Mike.
Well, you see, it's in the name, you know, that's what I do.
All right, so back to the skill level progression. What do you think has contributed to that? Why such a change?
Well, I'll just say for me, like when I started teaching probably 2000, 2001, it was like, why don't you teach? I'm like, okay, I will teach. I didn't know what to teach. I mean, so, but hey, I went and I give them some information, you know, and I look back now and it's like, wow, you don't know what you don't know until you know.
Mm-hmm.
Every class that I ever did, I always took something away from it, and sometimes it's not teaching the same. It's more teaching something specific 10 different ways so that the student can understand it.
Yeah.
But just by saying, they may not understand it, but you said it, they don't understand it, but there it is. Where, you know, the more experienced you are in teaching, you can pick up that they didn't understand it. So then you try to go down a different until they do understand it. And I think that's some of it there. So every few years that the new batch of people that are climbing to the top have all the information from the people that have been around for a while, and then they just constantly enhance. I mean, look at Christian, right? Mm-hmm. He had him that a couple weeks ago, and he was on there. I mean, very talented young man.
Do you think social media has impacted it at all?
I'm sorry, say again?
Do you think social media and people posting videos and things like that on social media has made any contribution to that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, back in the day, every time I went to a match, I would always record all my competitors as well as me. And I'd go back and I mean, literally frame by frame, you know, okay, where can I pick up a little bit here, a little bit there? I mean, because the shooting can only happen so fast. So it's, you know, you're looking at all the aspects of it. And for sure, I mean, now everybody on social media is posting everything. You see it all the time, you know. And I look at some of them like, wow, he could be so much better if.
Mm-hmm.
He could do this and even be better than what he is, you know.
I don't think that process ever stops if you're a competitor. You know, you're always watching your videos like, man, the way I put my foot down right there was terrible. Even if it's the smallest little thing that really didn't affect your stage whatsoever, you're still pretty critical of yourself.
Like, yeah. What this generation doesn't understand is that back in the day, you had to actually show up to a major match to see these guys that you want to learn from and video them on your phone or an actual camera back in the day.
Your camcorder.
You can just go to YouTube and look it up.
Yeah, every time I went to the range, I had my Sharp View Cam, and it set out there, and a big screen timer behind me, so it would be hit the record and then hit the timer, and so they both activated at once. That was the only way to even see what you could do. Now you know, all you have to do is look up your name, and you can find where somebody has posted a video of you somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so crazy how much how much it's
so
changed.
Do you think the competitive nature of the new guys that are coming into the sport is more intense than maybe the previous generations?
I mean, everybody wants to be better. They don't want to, I mean, obviously they want to try to do the shortcuts as much as possible. That's what I always tell everybody. And probably the funniest thing is whenever, sorry, this is totally different. This reminded me of back when I was talking to Latham back in 05, and he took up golf and he goes, yeah, he goes, you know, the best thing you can do if you're new to any sport is take instruction. So he had been taking golf lessons, you know, instead of just going out there and be a hacker. And it's the same thing with new shooters. The best thing they can do before they do anything is get some form of instruction. You know, say, hey, I want to have a class with you. What do I need to practice? I'm like, don't do anything. Don't practice anything because you may be doing it incorrectly.
It's a waste of ammo at that point. Yeah, and there are so many more instructors out there now that weren't out there before. There's reading materials. You can get books. Now there are even subscription services where you can go and watch training videos. There's just so much more offered where back in the day, people would just kind of mess around and hope they figure it out and they were self-taught. And now the new people coming in, I wouldn't say are more competitive. They just are standing on the shoulders of giants as far as the knowledge available.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Just building off the blocks of what the people did before.
Right.
So this is what he did and this is what they did and how can I do it better? You know? So, I mean, and going back to the social media, I mean, that's kind of how I taught myself. You know, I mean, I would go on and I'd watch Josh videos and I'd watch moving efficiency videos and I'd do, you know, everything I could to come back from a match and say like, that sucked. Like, I felt like I was really bad in this area. Like, what can I do to improve? And I just go on YouTube and say like, okay, there's an idea. Let me try that at the next match. Or, you know, so like social media definitely helped me get to where I am because I'm, you know, and then you're able to talk to anybody, just like you said. So instead of having to go to the match to see the person that you want to see, you can literally go on Facebook and message whoever you want to message and ask them a question. Hope that they answer you, but you know,
it literally leveled up our sport.
Right.
For sure. And that's that's some of the reason that's been, you know, it's always escalating up because, you know, everybody's looking at the videos and getting instruction from multiple different people. And I mean, I've had people that's come in and said, oh, so-and-so said this, so-and-so said that, but I never understood it until you said it. And I'm sure they do the same thing. Mm-hmm. So I may have told them and then somebody else finally explained it in a way where they understand it. I mean, so, you know, it's a constant evolution.
There are a lot of things that were sort of the way it's always been done, and those things have evolved and changed. Can you think of any examples of you thought something was the way to do it, and then as you learned more and had more experience, realized, oh, maybe I was wrong. Maybe there's a better way to do it.
Well, I can say that I've taught techniques over the years that I thought that they were the correct way at the time, right?
Right.
But then, you know, you learn stuff just like going to a class. Every time I teach a class, I learn something. It's like, oh, wow, look at that. The timer says that's something to look at. That may be a better way to do it. And if so, then it's not like I argue. I change whatever I'm doing to the best way, you know. But using the timer is obviously the ultimate way to tell you if it's the better or the worst way to do it.
Yeah, it's the one thing that doesn't lie, no matter how it felt, you know, the time, you know, if it's faster, it's faster.
What's an example that jumps out to you?
Oh, several things. But I mean, in some of it's movement related, you know.
All right. Well, hey, based on that, I got a question for you. How much, what's the percentage of like the importance of movement and shooting? Like, is it 60-40? Is it 50-50? Like, what is that to you? Like, what is your opinion on it? Because like for me shooting PCC, it's like 70-30 almost movement. I mean, if you can't get around a course of fire, you're not going to be competitive.
Well, some, all right. Obviously everything is important. What do you do the most whenever you're shooting? If it's a 32 round course of fire, what do you do the most? Move. You're transferring gun from target to target. So you may do that 16 times. If there's steel in there, you're going to do it 18 to 20 times, right? So there's the primary focus. I need it to be transitions. Now, once you get you know, all the rest of that stuff into place, then what's the next thing? Okay, well, then it's going to be movement, right? So you're going to move anywhere from 4 to 7 times in the course of fire. And if you lose, you know, a half a second, even a quarter second every time that you move, you know, gee, what's the difference between 4 seconds that you wasted versus, you know, what the time is? So that's how everybody said, oh, I want to learn how to do this. I'm like, okay, well, we need to figure out how you can cut the most amount of time off of your course of fire to begin with, and then start to work back there.
Yeah, lowest hanging fruit.
I'm sorry? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the lowest hanging fruit.
Yeah. Yes.
Grant, did you have something you wanted to bring up?
Not at the moment, to be honest.
Sorry, I thought you were trying to chime in and we kept cutting you off.
I was burping.
So, Manny, are you still shooting matches?
Well, I hurt my knee back in July of last year, and we think it's an ACL that I tore, so I've got to get it fixed this summer. I mean, I was planning on, you know, I got a slot for the senior slot for the world shoot I was hoping to go and do, but time will tell. So I've got to wait the next few months and see what transpires. So
don't even know for sure if it's actually going to happen anyway.
Yeah, are you waiting to see if it actually happens kind of thing?
Yeah, well, you know, we have until the end of April to tell USPSA whether we're interested in still going. So I'm at least going to take up the last minute there and see what transpires. So, I mean, there's a long list of stuff that you have to do in order to even get on the airplane. Mm-hmm. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's my argument is, well, Russia's been banned from it. And there's a long list of stuff that I know you guys refused to do to go to it. So it's like, either way, we won't have the top two countries at the world shoot, even if it does happen. So you don't necessarily have a world shoot if you don't have the top two countries there.
Yeah, it's frustrating.
Yeah, and for countries like South Africa, you guys take 6 months just to get your paperwork approved. So if they don't confirm the world shoot soon enough, then you guys can't go either.
Well, no, we can, but we're borrowing guns when you get there.
You would think they would just make a decision. Just call it off. I mean, like, I don't understand. If they're not going to do it, why are you stringing people along?
Because people have paid and there's a lot of money riding on
it. So is it, so, all right. So if you paid and had all of this, would you rather find out another month from now if you're going to get canceled or just right now?
Right now. No, I agree with you. Right now. Like, just cancel the damn thing and let's host it in South Africa in 2024. But
I agree.
Yeah, it's a challenge because you've got people that qualified and spent all the time and money. I mean, I know what that took. You know, this is the first time I didn't make it, the one that this upcoming one. But in the years past, it's like put all that effort and money in, and then nothing happens. But I mean, it's just.
Well, worst is you were a junior in 2020, and now you're not.
Or a senior, but I'm 3 year older senior.
Right.
with a bit of a jiffy knee.
So
I feel bad for the kids. You know, that sucks for the kids, really. But
yeah, that really
then again, if they're going to a world shoot when they're a junior, they're probably pretty good. They're gonna have an okay career coming up. So yeah, it sucks.
Yeah, but we had a junior who was literally 20, and he was one of the top shooters here. Like, he had a really decent chance of making a junior title, but he's not junior anymore.
I don't know. I guess, but, you know, got to keep it going. So that, you know, life doesn't always work out. So at this point now, if he's really good, you know, he's going to start kicking your ass, and you better watch out, boy.
So Manny, do you have any training tips you'd like to offer up to our listeners? Anywhere from beginner to advanced? Anything that jumps out to you?
I'd like you to do it in the beginner. I shot a match today with two people that were brand new to this match or brand new to shooting and had no idea kind of what they were doing. Like, what would be your advice for somebody that is literally like, I got a gun and I know how to use it, but like, I've never played this game before. What's the biggest thing that you would tell them?
Well, I'll say what the guy told me whenever I went to my first competition, never been to a competition. And he says, you know, all you have to do, nobody cares how fast or how slow you go. They don't care if you hit the target or you miss the target. The only thing they want is for you to be safe. And he says, he told me two things. He says, he taught me the 90 degree rule. And he says, if you're not looking down the sights, make the finger touch the back of your hand. Now go have fun. And I did that for years. It's just like I swear I'd catch it on doors and walls. Guy told me, but he was right. You know, I didn't get DQ'd for the first 15 years I shot. You know, that and obviously get instruction. That's the key number one. You know, I get somebody new. The first thing I do is teach them the basics, and then, you know, teach them how to hit the target, and then we start moving through the course of fire. So teaching gun manipulation. You know, making sure that even if they have to run backwards, that the muzzle's going to stay forward, you know, pointing towards the back of the berm. That'd be my two
cents. You said something important there when you said have fun. So when you've been shooting for a while, it's hard to keep that fun factor in there. I know one of the things that you do that I was very entertained by this when we shot together in Missouri, you, and I know you've done this a few times, take your magazine and throw it on the stomp pad to activate the swinger so you don't have to go to that position. Can't I love that. That's one of the things you do to make it fun. So what are some other suggestions you can give to people that say, oh, it's starting to feel like work just to go shoot a local? How do you keep it fun?
Well, and I look at it one stage at a time. You know, somebody says, man, I crashed that stage. And an example, I did this back, I don't remember, one of the nationals I shot. Ended up in second place behind Mr. Vogel, and I zeroed stage. The first stage of the day, I zeroed 120-point stage. And it's like, how do you come back from that, mm-hmm. right? So I started looking at, you know, every stage is like a new match. You know, okay, I didn't do up to my level of performance on this stage, but I can do it on the next one. It's not that, oh, I did bad on that one. Now I got to turn and burn on this one to try to make up for it, because it doesn't work that way. As we all know, the only thing you got to do is continue to lose ground if you try to turn and burn. So, you know, staying within your skill set and treating each stage like it's a separate one, that's how you have fun. Because it's like, okay, I crashed that one. It used to be I cared a lot. Now it's like, whatever. Now I just yell, maybe throw a mag on the ground or something. And then next stage, and here it comes, you know, give me Tyson. I'm going after it. So, but it does become more of a challenge. You know, that I've done this for 27 years. You know, the fun factor for me is not what it used to be, mainly because winning is when you win, it's fun, obviously. Mm-hmm. You don't win, that it becomes more of a challenge of why am I doing this? You know, and in the end, it's to socialize and learn something that you don't know. So
if you're not winning because you have an injury or something like that, there's not a whole lot you can do about that and just enjoy the experience. But if you're not winning because you're not practicing, then maybe that's an indicator that what you can do to make it fun is practice and get better, and then you start winning.
Of course, for sure. Key number one is set a goal, set a dream, you know, and then chase it. You know, I've had a few people over the years, and they come in, they want a training, and I had several training sessions with them. And I said, usually I make them sit down and I say, all right, here's what I want you to do. What's your dream? Write it on a piece of paper. And it's okay. Now, what are you going to do to obtain that? Because it's not just going to come to you. You got to go after it. You know, and I make them do 1 month, 3 month, 6 month, 1 year, 2 year goals in order to accomplish their dream. You know, and I've had a few people that actually did it. They accomplished their dream, whatever it was. One guy was like, I want to make mastery, made master class. He got out of the sport. Not that that's what you want, but he accomplished his dream. And he said, that's the best I can do without being a professional. And that's what I want to do. When I do that, I got it. He did.
That's horse.
That's why I have my students set 3 long-term goals instead of just one.
I mean, that's only a handful, you know, only probably 3 people. You know, but at the end, okay, you accomplish that dream. What's the next dream? For me, my first dream was I want to be on the world team. I want to represent the country, you know, with the red, white, and blue. You know, that's that.
Tell us about, that's something I wanted to know. In the world shoot, you know, tell us about sort of the pomp and circumstance that goes with it and the parades and things like that.
Oh, I mean, obviously, for one, it's a lot of work. I mean, you know, I was part of the one we had in Frostproof in 2014, and the amount of work that goes into it's staggering, and the amount of money, you know, crazy. But I remember, you know, every world shoot I've been to, there's nothing you can be more proud than walking behind your flag walking down a street and all the people are watching you and you're like, I'm from the US, or, you know, wherever you're from, I'm from South Africa, or wherever it is, you know, there's just no prouder moment than to be able to do something like that.
Yeah, and they literally empty the streets, they block off traffic, and you're marching down the street in a procession of all the different countries grouped together, led by someone carrying their flag and a sign with the name of their country.
Absolutely, it's awesome.
It's very cool. What about the award ceremony? How is that different than what we have here for, say, nationals now?
Well, you know, some of the nationals we've had more elaborate, like, you know, people wear ties, you know, dress up. Other ones, they'll wear, you know, their shooting shirt. I mean, it doesn't matter. It's a matter of, for me, that's a prestige event. So I wanted to wear a suit whenever, like, last one was in France, but they wanted us to wear our team jerseys, so, which is cool. But to me, that's more
casual.
Yeah. But it does represent our country well, so, with the shirts. So.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter what your country does, as long as you all do the same thing.
Yes.
That's something that has really changed in our sport as well. And we've talked about this on the show before, is how the award ceremony has become much more casual, more like a backyard barbecue in the US for nationals compared to, I don't know, even 12 years ago when it was a suit and tie event.
Well, and I think it's something all we'd have to do is, if everybody contacted their area director, if there's enough people that said, hey, we want this to be a more prestige event, I'm sure they have the ability to do that, you know?
I'm just lazy. I like wearing my shorts.
Yeah, I'm gonna be with Mike on this one.
My flops, man. I just shot all weekend. I'm tired, you know. Shit.
Yeah, we do all of that. Like, it's a smart casual event, you know. And I'm like, no, just let me just bring my shooting jerseys fresh from the range.
Yeah,
just covered in range dust. I want to have a beer. Give me my award.
Just make sure there's beers. You know, if there's beers, it's gonna be a good time. That's it. Yeah.
I don't know. I thought the red carpet event style award ceremony was really cool back in the day.
Yeah, probably the most elaborate one I ever went to was the one in Ekaterinburg a couple of years ago at the Extreme.
Oh, yeah.
Crazy, you know, bands from all over the world. It was a suit and tie event, you know.
I'm so mad right now with everything going on in the world, because we were going to go there for the IPSC match this year, and then that doesn't seem like it's going to happen. And I was very excited for that. So really looking forward to that one, because Keita talks about that range all the time, and now you just said it. It just makes me think about the match that we didn't get to go shoot this year. Disappointing.
Yeah, I was supposed to win as well there and to Czech Republic. So
do you still do much for your own training now, or are you pretty much just teaching?
Pretty much just teaching. You know, after I get my body back on track, that's why I hope, you know, if the world shoot happens, great. If not, then, you know, hopefully everything will be back in place by nationals. Nationals last year was a disaster because I couldn't run. I literally hobbled and screamed the whole time. You know, it was a challenge to end up in the 20th places at a nationals. I'd not done that for many, many years, but
I hear you on that.
The movements are not so.
I actually got shot in the ankle in Aruba, and Mike had to give me a piggyback ride. I couldn't walk at all, but finished the match hopping on one foot. It was awful.
Yeah, I can only imagine.
Hasn't been the same since. So I totally understand what you're talking about. It's rough.
Yes. Especially when you get more mature. Not that I'm old.
So you're tell seasoned. Me about any companies that you would like to give a shout out to.
Oh, well, let's see. Volusia County Gun Club. I mean, that's where we host all of our matches at. You know, Deep River Custom built me one of my last gun. Da Vinci for making my custom serial number and sights and everything on it.
Da Vinci Machining.
Yes.
Hallelujah. Good people.
Yep. And Black Scorpion for, you know, giving me the fast holster and the belt and mag pouches. So, and of course, my wife, you know, without that, why I'd be in trouble. So,
yeah, I keep hearing all these wonderful things Jessica does for JJ, putting on his classes. I'm like, man, I need a wife. It just be so, it sounds like it'd be so much easier.
There's nothing
easier. Or at least a secretary.
Right. Somebody that cares, you know, that's always nice.
Yeah. Well, maybe I'll put Pixie to work, you know, doing my receipts and things like that.
You've been doing it wrong. You raised her. She's 14 now. You know, you paid for all that time from 0 to 14. She's got a little back. It's called child labor. There's nothing wrong with it.
Child labor force. Right, Manny, is there anything that we haven't talked about that you would like to talk about?
Not that I can't think of anything, but I've got some timers, so.
So where are you going to be at this year for people to see you? I know you said you're going to bring up a tent to Area 6. Is there going to be any other matches that you're traveling to that people can come meet you?
Well, my intent was to hit all the area matches this year and set up a vendor booth and all those, but with my body, my knee being messed up, I've been out of it long enough now where I kind of miss shooting. So I want to get that fixed and, you know, this fall be more on track to go to the matches versus this summer. So, but then there's next year. So
awesome.
So are you doing a knee replacement?
I don't know. I've got to go get an MRI. So.
Okay. And your other knee's good? Or is so that far, one kind of bum too?
What's bad is from playing racquetball, you know, so some stupid sport.
So it's just one knee.
Yeah.
Whether it's one or two, I think a replacement
sucks either way. You know, I mean, you need both, you know,
like kind of hop versus just, you know, turtle walk. So
that's tough.
Yeah. I've trained people how to move again after getting knee replacements and everyone has said they feel so much better that they want to get the other one done too.
I can only imagine.
It's the first thing. You'll be feeling a lot better after that.
So.
We change our car tires. Let's change our knees on occasion as well.
All right, Manny. Well, thank you so much for coming on. We appreciate it.
Pleasure.
Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. This is awesome.
Looking forward to seeing you at A6, buddy. So.
All right. I'll see you there.
All right, man.
All right. Bye, guys.
See ya.
All right.